Okay, we're gonna have a look at next week now, when the government ministers are flying out to countries around the world and shake shamrocks and present crystal balls, and all eyes will be on the Taoiseach and the Tánaiste over in the epicentre of all things Irish America, with Leo Varadkar meeting Joe Biden in the White House. Well, joining me now is John Nicholls, journalist and author of The Fight for the Soul of the Democratic Party, to give us an idea of what political climate they're heading into. Good evening to you, John, or good afternoon in your case, indeed.
Afternoon on our side, evening on yours.
Yeah. The orange shadow of Donald Trump at this time in the election cycle, is that sunset or sunrise, that orange glow, John?
I think it's sunset. Things aren't looking so good for him. There's a lot of Republicans getting into the race against him, or at least threatening to do so in the primaries. So it is possible that he does not have more visits with Irish officials in his future.
And the key issues facing Joe Biden, he's going to carve out time in his busy schedule, as US presidents have done every year, to meet the Taoiseach and the Tánaiste when they fly over there. What use is this to Joe Biden? He's proud of his Irish roots, obviously, but
yeah.
Is it good for electoral purposes too, from his point of view?
Of course it is. It's very, very good for electoral purposes. And, you know, American presidents have been meeting with Irish leaders going back to the 1950s, Democrats and Republicans. But generally, the meeting with Irish leaders is especially important for Democratic politicians, and it becomes doubly vital for Democratic politicians who happen to be Irish, like Biden, and who happen to be Catholic, like Biden. And so the connections are all very, very good. It sort of solidifies his image as a guy who has a tie to a working class, still in much of America, working class Irish communities. And that's good for him. Biden has played on his Irish Catholic roots going back to his beginnings in politics in Delaware, Wilmington, Delaware, back in the early 1970s. It's always been a big part of his persona.
How far will that get him? What else, indeed, does he need for the remainder of his term for people to see him as the obvious candidate to contest it for the Democratic Party?
Well, it's a good question. Look, at this point, Biden seems to be easily the front runner, almost a certain nominee if he wants to run. He's very well positioned in that regard. It's not that he's overwhelmingly popular, but parties don't usually change their leader if they've got a sitting president, and I don't see much evidence that Democrats are headed that way with Biden. So he's likely to be the nominee, and then the Irish connection becomes very helpful for him, because for Biden to win, he has to get a very strong vote from minority communities, of course, but he's also got to get at least a significant portion of the vote from white working class voters. The Irish connection is helpful to him in that regard.
And finally, how much bread and butter is done, business is done around the areas of St. Patrick's Day, as Irish leaders going to America are now, representing Ireland, obviously, and its economic interests, but there's also continuing and possibly warmer discussions going on between the US and the EU on trade, a better reset of relations between Catherine Tai, the Trade Secretary, and the EU on that front as well. And obviously, the big tech sector that's located in Ireland, and also then concerns in Europe over the big subsidies program in the Inflation Reduction Act. How much are they going there, as much as EU government leaders, as well as Irish leaders, in terms of how that's seen from the US side?
Well, that's a spot-on question. That's exactly the place to go, because while this will be a photo opportunity, right, there'll be all the cameras taking pictures and everybody, saying whatever Irishy things they can say, once that photo opportunity is done, the Irish leaders who are at the White House will have an opportunity to have serious conversation with the President of the United States. And they make a personal connection that allows them to do follow-up calls. And yes, that EU connection is really vital because of all of everything from Brexit, onward. And so I think that this should not be seen as just a camera ready event. This is also a significant policy oriented conversation that probably makes it possible to have more significant policy-oriented conversations later this year and into next year. So it's very good for Ireland in that regard, and frankly, it's good for the EU.
All right, John Nicholls, journalist and author of The Fight for the Soul of the Democratic Party. Thanks very much for joining us this afternoon, evening, on The Late Debate. Just to look, I suppose, at the... I suppose it'd be rude to continue without looking at the Green Party. They may be feeling left out slightly at this stage in the programme. Philip, how have they performed so far in government? We've seen maybe the seeds of some trouble over the eviction ban, but only really from the usual suspects. Is there any reason to believe they are nearing the fate of the usual small party disaster at this point in government?
It depends on what view you're taking of their role in there. If you're a Green Party voter, if you voted for them to get into government, I think they've got a lot of their policies over the line. They've pushed their climate change agenda. They have got through policies and have put in legally binding legislation and rules around what reductions in carbon emissions the government has to achieve over the coming years. So, like, they have achieved an awful lot in government. But like you say, I'm not sure how the public will react to them at the next election, given all that has come with voting for them. It's hit people in their pockets, whether it's to do with fuel, whether it's to do with petrol. Their policies are going to hurt people because they want to, and look, they're doing it for the right reasons, to save the planet, etc. One of the other problems I think they are going to have is there's an element within the party of do as I say, not as I do. Especially when you see next
week. In what respect?
Well, when you see next week, the three ministers or the four ministers or cabinet are jetting off to probably the furthest parts of the world that most of the cabinet are. Eamon Ryan's off to Shanghai and Taiwan and China. Catherine Martin is off to
Los Angeles.
Pippa Hackett is going down to Tanzania. Roderick O'Gorman is going to India. And you can be sure they're all sitting up in first class for all these trips as well. So, like, these, which account, which they say...
Maybe they're paying for carbon offsets for all of those...
Not go so far away as well. It just seems that these are the people who are asking us to make a little bit of a... to make a difference and to take a bit of a hit. And it just seems sometimes that they're not willing to do that as well. They still want to do the things and the activities that they're asking everybody else to stop doing.
I think that's a fair criticism, but I also think other parties are underestimating
is
the
it
value.
So somebody has to go there. They're, you know, they're members of a government where somebody has to take the long flight.
They go like, I'll go to, I don't know, France.
Yeah, like, but I think a lot of parties are underestimating the value of that climate vote or the green vote, for want of a different word, because the Green Party really got a lot of gains out of that. And I'd say that's the majority of their gains come from that. And other parties don't seem to be targeting that or picking it up. Sinn Féin have been brutal on climate change. And I think the only party that seemed to be copping onto this is the Labour Party, who we were kind of put the boot into earlier on. But Evanna Batchik seems to be offering
Democrats offer themselves on climate. The Sinn Féin have a relatively high profile person on climate, albeit, you know, maybe not shared with the rest of the party, for example, Darren O'Rourke, but Lynn Boylan.
Can we really pin down what the climate policy is for Sinn Féin? I mean, whenever these debates comes up about what percentage of carbon emissions and all these sort of things, they never commit to a percentage. They always say, we haven't seen the data. Right. We haven't got access to the data that the government has.
All right. Still a potential win. Sorry, I'll come back to you, Christina. Still a potential win on that for the Greens then, Jack. Their identity is essentially preserved, but how many parsnips will that butter? Organic parsnips, obviously.
Of course, and fair trade, of course. I think that Adam's right. I think that there is a green vote out there, or there's an ecologically conscious vote, or there's a vote of there's a cohort of people who are concerned about the environment and concerned about the kind of seismic and systemic threat that that climate change presents. The question is whether the Greens will always be in a position to capitalize that on that. And I think that some of their ministers, and to a greater extent their leader, is a kind of polarizing figure. Like, when you look at his popularity ratings, he lags well behind the other coalition leaders, lags well behind Mary Lou McDonald, I think. his popularity is about 22%. And you know, he can put his foot in it, to be quite frank, and I think that annoys people within his own party. On the flip side, he's very secure within the parliamentary party, with the notable exception of Nasa Horgan and Patrick Costello. Although it's worth noting as well that Patrick Costello doesn't seem to be quite as militant on the eviction issue as Nasa is. Maybe that'll change over time. But like, beyond that, I don't think that like there's any pretenders to the throne. He's fairly secure in that. So like, I think that I'd be surprised if there was a kind of shake up or any vulnerability for him anytime
maybe
soon.
Not a bad thing, Christina, to have an opposition and a government for the price of one in one small party, and a distinguishing climate selling point as well.
Yeah, like I think there's obviously there's always going to be that green vote there, and the Green Party members are constantly pointing to their achievements within government, be it the legislation and all the climate action plans that they've got over the line. But at the same time, I don't think they can hide away or put their head underneath the blanket when it comes to some of the issues that, I'm sorry, you're in government, you're going to have to deal with too, and you're going to have to take responsibility there, and housing being one of them. Just because, you know, you got a number of achievements on the Green Initiative and the climate action stuff doesn't mean that you can shy away from the responsibilities, right. I think, when it comes to things like
that. I'm going to have to do a quick whip round the table. I want marks for government out of 10. Christina?
So far. Oh, God.
In this year. Performance in the first quarter?
5.
Okay. Adam?
4.
3.
You nearly said 2 and 6.
I thought 5 was bad.
Like 3.5, I would say 4.
Okay, performance of opposition in the first quarter. Christina, out of 10.
I'd say I'd give him a 6, yeah.
Adam?
5.
Philip?
No, look, I'd say 3 as well. It just all has been very...
All right, Jack?
4.
All right, okay.
Be nice.